The name of the series is Show and Tell. And it reminded me of a story that I heard about a particular teacher. And she said to her class, "Tomorrow I want you to come and show something about your religion. It'll be show and tell." And so the next day, a girl got up in class and she said, "Good morning, my name is Mary. I'm Roman Catholic and this is a crucifix." The next person who got up was a young boy and he said, "My name is Benjamin, I'm Jewish, and this is the Star of David." The next one got up and he said, "Good morning, my name is Jimmy, I'm Brethren, and this is a casserole." When Christ invaded our family, things changed and things never were the same again. From a non-Christian background, as it were, unaware of the gospel of Jesus Christ came, and my father was 40, my mother was 33, and I was a boy. And our family was never the same again. And I was brought up in the environment that the gospel is really important, and that it's really important to share the gospel with people who don't know it. And I still have memories of hearing my mum and dad, sometimes in the early hours of the morning, explaining to people how to find faith and salvation in Christ. And as I was developing the message during the week, I remembered a time when I was 14 years of age and an evangelist by the name of Colin Graham was holding a combined crusade, as we used to call it, in the Opera House in Palmerston North. And there was a lot of talk about the gospel and the importance of the gospel. And I was already brought up in a home like that. But I remember I was just in the fourth form. I was 14 years of age and I wanted so much to be an evangelist. And so I went home and I knelt beside my bed just after school. And I said, "Lord, I'd love to be an evangelist, but if it's just a Bible teacher, that's okay." But the gospel is at the heart of our life. And as we sit here today and as we think about showing the gospel and telling the gospel, we realize that if we neglect the gospel, we neglect the basis of our faith. And so that's why it's such an important series of subjects. I haven't been told it, but I suspect that the aim of the series is to strengthen our understanding and strengthen our concern for the people who do not know about Christ and are living and they're dying without Him. And basic to evangelism is the fact that we're preaching the gospel to people who will spend eternity, possibly, without Him. And Jesus said, "I've come to seek and save the lost." And to preach the gospel is very, very important. You may have read a book by Rebecca Pippett or Becky Pippett. And it was called, she wrote, I don't know, 30 years ago. And it's called Out of the Salt Shaker and Into the World. And in that, she was talking about the fact we ought to get out of our little huddles and get out to the world and preach the gospel. And then just a couple of years ago, she wrote a book called Stay Salt. And she's talking about a world that is changing and the way that we proclaim the gospel seems to change. And we certainly have to show it as well as tell it. And she said, evangelism is still easier than we think and harder than we imagine. And that's true. And sometimes people are very open to the gospel and it's easy. And having spent a number of years in Brazil, I know it's easy there. People are very open in our particular culture. It's not so easy. And I'll talk about that if time allows as we get into the message. But she said, evangelism is still easier than we think and harder than we imagine. It is both exciting and deadly serious. And it is, friends. It's exciting. And it's serious. So we're not just filling in time when we talk about it. We're talking about something that changes people's lives and changes their eternal destinies. There's a statement that's been very helpful to me, and I hope to others, and it is the statement that evangelism is simply finding out where God is working in another person's life. In other words, it doesn't depend on me, it doesn't depend on us as individuals, it's all God's work. He's the one who saves. I can save no one, you can save no one. But what we are expected to do is to cooperate with God in his task of reaching the world for Christ. So you see, evangelism and personal evangelism, that's one-to-one evangelism, sharing the good news about Jesus, that's God's work. And what we try to do is cooperate with him. And what we're trying to do is find out where God is working in a person's life. And I found that quite helpful. Here is the reading for this morning, and it's from Mark chapter 5, and I'll read from verse 1. So they arrived at the other side of the lake in the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus climbed out of the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit came out from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the burial caves and could no longer be restrained, even with a chain. Whenever he was put into chains and shackles, as he often was, he snapped the chains from his wrists and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Day and night he wandered among the burial caves and in the hills, howling and cutting himself with sharp stones. When Jesus was still some distance away, the man saw him, ran to meet him, and bowed low before him. With a shriek, he screamed, "Why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In the name of God, I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had already said to the spirit, "Come out from the man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus demanded, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, because there are many of us beside this man." Then the evil spirits begged him again and again not to send them to some distant place. There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. "Send us into those pigs," the spirit begged. "Let us enter them." So Jesus gave them permission. The evil spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the entire herd of about 2,000 pigs plunged down the deep hillside into the lake and drowned in the water. The herdsmen fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons. He was sitting there fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. Then those who had seen what happened told the others about the demon-possessed man and the pigs. And the crowd began pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. And so we come to the text for this morning. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. But Jesus said, "No, go home to your family and tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been." So the man started out to visit the 10 towns of that region and began to proclaim the great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them. It looks like our slides aren't coming up today, but that doesn't matter. It's a spoken word after all. I want to approach the text from two angles, and the first is, go home, tell your family. And so verse 19 says, and I've just read it, as Jesus was getting in the boat, but Jesus said, "No, go home to your family and tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been." Now, one of the interesting things as you go through the Gospel of Mark is so many times the Lord tells people, don't tell anyone. And during the week as I was preparing the message, I tried to find out when it was that Jesus actually said to people, don't tell anybody, keep a secret, don't tell anybody. and I won't go into it in depth, but to the healed leper, he said, don't tell anybody about this. And to the spirits, chapter 3, Mark's Gospel, he says, Jesus sternly commanded the spirits not to reveal who he was to the crowd. And that's in Mark 7. Jesus told the crowd not to tell anyone. But the more he told them not to, the more they spread the news to the disciples. Chapter 8. But Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. And to Peter, James, and John on the Mount of Transfiguration, chapter 9, he told them not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. And so one of the things that strikes you as strange as you go through the Gospel of Mark is how many times the Lord says, don't tell anybody, don't tell anybody. But here it stands out. And the explanation of the others is outside the scope of this morning's message. So we concentrate on this positive statement, go home to your family and tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been. Now, the text that we have is recorded in the Gospel of Mark. The word gospel means good news. And there are four books in the Bible. For those who are not familiar with this, there are four books in the Bible and they are called Gospels: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And they are stories about the good news of Jesus, how he came and he preached and he gave sight to the blind and gave salvation to the lost. And that's good news. And it is good. It's really good, this news. On Monday, Gwenda and I were in town here in Cambridge, and I think we're having coffee or something. But anyway, there was a man outside, and he was seated at a table. And he had a bag beside him, and he had a book on his table. And he was a Maori gentleman, and he had full facial tattoos. And what you could see of his body, he had tattoos everywhere. I began to talk to him. And I saw the book and I asked him about it. He said, I was a leader among the mongrel mob, but things changed. I decided to get out of it. He actually, as it turns out, because I read the book, I bought the book and read it, finished yesterday. It turns out that he was the president of the mongrel mob in Tamranui, in Otrahonga, and somewhere else that I could remember, but doesn't matter. But anyway, he lived a brutal, sordid kind of life, as I found out in the book. But when we were talking to him, I asked a few more questions, and he said, I was born, he almost shouted it. He said, I was born again, and that's why I was freed. Very much like this man. He was a leper, or he was a demoniac. And he was one who was shunned by society, and he had his own way of doing things. But when he came to Christ, he was freed. And, I mean, that's good, isn't it? Isn't the gospel good news? We needn't be ashamed of it because it's so good. It's good news, and it is news. And that means that we're telling it to people who may never have heard it before. There's something new. And the reality is that each one of us has contacts with people who don't know it yet, don't know that Jesus came, that Jesus died, that he rose again, and that he saves those who ever come to him in faith for salvation. And it is news. But it is conveyed verbally. You see, the gospel is shown, but that's not enough. It must also be told. It's verbal. I mentioned that we lived in Brazil, and on one occasion I was uptown, right in the center of the city in which we lived, and there was a man and he was preaching the gospel, and it was very clear. He spoke it with authority, and he talked about how Jesus came and he died. He was the Son of God, but he didn't stay dead. He rose again, and he's triumphant today, and he'll save whoever comes to him. But no one was listening because he was drunk. And that's an extreme example, ladies and gentlemen, but a credibility of our message depends on the testimony of our life. We show that which we tell. But it is verbal, and we find Paul, the Apostle Paul, saying, how can people call on him to save them unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they've never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them? And so here you have the process. People are told, and then they hear, and then they believe, and then they call on him. But you see, if we don't tell them, if we don't pass on the good news, then they won't call on him. And while we must always be positive in our presentation of the gospel, it is also true that people are lost without Christ. Tell your family. There was a young man who attended this church. He shifted, he lives elsewhere. And I'll call him Raymond. In those days in this church, we had two meetings Sunday morning. It was in the chapel there, and we'd have, first of all, the breaking of bread, and then we'd have a cup of tea, and then we'd have a family service. And during the cup of tea time, Raymond talked to me, and he was talking about his mother, his Nana. And he said, my Nana doesn't know the Lord, and I'd love her to know the Lord, but it's so difficult. And the reality, ladies and gentlemen, it is quite difficult to talk to family members about the Lord. I know that. But I said to him, to Raymond, I said, well, why don't you try this? This is what I understand works quite well. Find a time when your Nana is by herself and you're there and just say, Nana, do you mind if I take 5 minutes to talk to you about something that's really important to me? And then talk to her about the Lord. In those old days too, we had a meeting Sunday night, and I was at the door welcoming people in, and Raymond came to me and he said, Brian, it works. And I said, what works? I'd forgotten about our conversation in the morning. I said, what works? And he said, this afternoon, I was with my Nana, and I said to her, Nana, do you mind if I talk to you for 5 minutes about something that's really important to me? And she said, sure. And I talked to her about Jesus, and I talked to her about salvation. He was so thrilled. About 2 years went by, and I met him outside the service station on Victoria Street, and he said, Brian, Nana accepted the Lord. 2 weeks later, she died. Not because she accepted the Lord, but isn't it good that she had accepted the Lord? And the reality, and I don't know, I probably dozens of times people have come to me and they've been heartbroken about their children. They're prodigals, showing no interest. And so very often I tell them that story and I say, just seek an opportunity, just square your shoulders, go a couple of times and say, do you mind if I talk to you about something that's very important? And see if the Lord is working. Remember that personal evangelism is simply finding out where God is working in another person's life. And you may not know it without if you don't ask it, but just ask and find out whether God is working in your son's life, in your daughter's life, in your mother's life, in your father's life. Just ask permission. Jill Briscoe, the wife of a very good Bible teacher, Stuart, who used to teach quite a lot out at Capenray when he was in New Zealand, she came to the Lord and she felt very difficult. And she said, I was a bit hesitant to tell my parents because I didn't think they would understand, and they didn't. And I thought they'd be offended, and they were. And she said, I was just a little bit unhappy about that. And I was talking to a friend of mine, she said, who was a believer. And she said to Jill, don't say you're the only one in the family. Say you're the first one in the family to be a Christian. And the reality is, if you are the only one in your family who's a Christian, then Christ has a beachhead into your family. And who knows, through you, others in your family can come to Christ. And so you find in verse 19, the Lord says, go home and tell them. And the second thing is, tell others. And so it says in verse 20, So the man started off to visit the 10 towns of that region and began to proclaim the great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them. E. Stanley Jones was a great evangelist. And he was in Africa and he was preaching on one occasion. And afterwards, someone said to him, "You seem to be bursting with something to say. I think you could keep six tongues busy if you had them." And Jones says, "I was and am bursting with something to say, for I'm trying to tell the good news of Jesus Christ." And here you find a man, he's told to go home, but he does more than that. He's bursting with good news. He wants others to know about it. Are you bursting with that? It's a challenge to me. Are we bursting with this exciting news? We have salvation now. We have Christ now. The Spirit of God lives in us now. We have forgiveness. We're on our way to heaven. I mean, that's pretty good news, isn't it? And are we bursting to tell it? I'm very conscious of the time, so I'm just trying to weed out stuff here. Yeah, I will do this. It'll take a couple of minutes, but I think it makes a point. Sometimes it's very difficult for us to open the subject of the gospel, isn't it? And during the week, I remembered the story that I had come across quite a long time ago. And it's about a particular pastor, and he was in a plane. He was plainly dressed, and he was sitting beside a man. He didn't want really to enter into conversation, but he was greeted. And the pastor was a little bit embarrassed because he was so casually attired. And he decided he looked straight ahead, but the man greeted him and the pastor asked about the man's work. And here's what happened. The man said, "I'm in the figure salon business. We can change a woman's self-concept by changing her body, and it's really a very profound, powerful thing." His pride spoke between the lines. "You look my age," I said. "Have you been at this long?" "I just graduated from the University of Michigan School of Business Administration. They've given me so much responsibility already, and I feel very honored. In fact, I hope to eventually manage the western part of the operation." "So you're a national organization?" I asked, becoming impressed despite myself. "Oh, yes. We are the fastest growing company of our kind in the nation. It's really good to be part of an organization like that, don't you think?" I nodded approvingly and thought, impressive. Proud of his work and accomplishment. Why can't Christians be proud like that? Why are we so often apologetic about our faith in our church? Looking askance at my clothing, he asked the inevitable question, "And what do you do?" "It's interesting that we have similar business interests," I said. "You are in the body-changing business. I'm in the personality-changing business. We apply basic theocratic principles to accomplish indigenous personality modification." He was hooked, but I knew he would never admit it. Pride is powerful. "You know, I've heard about that," he replied hesitantly, "but do you have an office here in the city?" "Oh, we have many offices. We have offices here and down the state. In fact, we're national. We have at least one office in every state of the Union, including Alaska and Hawaii." He had this puzzled look on his face. He was searching his mind to identify this huge company he must have read or heard about, perhaps in the Wall Street Journal. "As a matter of fact, we've gone international. And management has a plan to put at least one office in every country of the world by the end of this business era." I paused. "Do you have that in your business?" I asked. "Well, no, not yet," he answered. "But you mentioned management. How do they make it work?" "It's a family concern. There's a father and a son and they run everything." "It must take a lot of capital," he asked skeptically. "You mean money?" I asked. "Yes, I suppose so. No one knows how much it takes, but we never worry because there's never a shortage. The boss always seems to have enough. He's a very creative guy. And the money will just be there. In fact, those of us in the organization have a saying about our boss. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. "Oh, he's into ranching too," asked my captive friend. "No, just a saying we use to indicate his wealth." My friend sat back in his seat. pausing over our conversation. "What about you?" he asked. "The employees, there's something to see," I said. "They have a spirit that invades the organization. It works like this. The father and son love each other so much that their love filters down through the organization so that we all find ourselves loving one another too. I know this sounds old-fashioned in a world like ours, but I know people in the organization who are willing to die for me. Do you have that in your business?" I was almost shouting now. People were beginning to shift noticeably in their seats. "Not yet," he said. Quickly changing strategies, he asked, "But what are the benefits?" "Thus substantial," I encountered with a gleam. "I have complete life insurance, fire insurance, all the basics. You might not believe this, but it's true. I have holdings in a mansion that's being built for me right now for my retirement. Do you have that in your business?" "Not yet," he answered wistfully. The light was dawning. "You know, one thing bothers me about all you're saying. I've read the journals, and if your business is all you say it is, why haven't I heard about it before?" "That's a good question," I said. "After all, we have a 2,000-year-old tradition." "Wait a minute," he said. "You're right," I interrupted. "I'm talking about the church. I knew it. You know, I'm Jewish. Want to sign up?" I asked. Now, I read that not to embarrass myself or to embarrass you, because I'm not like that. I'm actually very slow-witted. You know, I don't come up with smart answers like that, and I'm a bit of a slow thinker. So what I find is it's quite handy to have a few questions up my sleeve, and so I'm going through it pretty quickly now. Have some questions. One is, when you meet somebody and they have a Bible name, just ask the question, "Did you know that your name comes from the Bible?" And in not too distant ago times, I've had a Mark, I've used that with, and a Joshua and a Caleb. And it's amazing how many men's names particularly come from the Bible. So that's an opener. Or what church do you go to? Are you interested in spiritual things? And invite them to a church activity. I have to finish, so I'll finish with this story. Invite them to church. Invite them to the equivalent of Sunday school. Do something like that, because more people come to Christ that way than through reading a tract or through a radio program. That's the reality. And if I had time sometime, I'll explain and underline that. We have a friend. He lives in Australia in a place called Lithgow, New South Wales. His name's Ken Clark. He's always seeking opportunities. He was the one who taught me sometimes to say, "What church do you go to?" You know, it's sort of a non-threatening kind of question, and it can lead to all kinds of conversation, and we have to leave it at that point. But anyway, he has quite an interesting story to tell. There was a young boy by the name of Bill. And Bill came, and he was building what Australians call a billy cart. We just call it a trolley or a cart. And Ken said, "Look, if you come to Sunday school, you can actually have these wheels," because the boy was, Bill, was wanting to buy those wheels. So the little boy came to Sunday school. He got his wheels and he received salvation. His name is Bill Newman. Bill Newman's an evangelist. He had a big crusade in Hamilton a few years ago. And at present, as I understand it, or about this time, having a big crusade in Cairns, and he's seen thousands come to Christ. Invite someone to church. And we're fortunate. It's not hard to invite somebody to this church or a church activity. We're fortunate. Try it. Let's just take a minute. Less than a minute. Just take 20 seconds to respond to whatever it is the Spirit of God is saying to us this morning. Is there somebody on your mind that you'd like to see come to Christ? Pray for an opportunity and ask a question. Just a few seconds of silent prayer. Lord, you've heard every prayer. They've been offered in the name of your Son, so that men and women, boys and girls, might find salvation in Jesus. Amen.